SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two at the races, and midweek, of course, Travers Week. We'll talk the three-year-olds and the Travers and do our normal stallion analysis. But before we do that, Sid Fernando, our favorite topic, how do you ignite a stallion career? Ship them abroad.
It just seems to happen, Steve. Sometimes it's after a stallion has been here a while. Sometimes it's a horse gets sold maybe prematurely earlier than anticipated, and it happens as well. It's a cliche. We talk about it. But, there's always some amusement to it because, it's like that. It's like the new guy that gets subbed into a game, you know. He comes in and the ball always finds him. And
that's true.
It's kind of similar to that here.
Part of the whole story, I imagine, with Honor and Serve is Bernardini himself, right? I mean, he's effective and successful. He's an upper. How do you describe? I mean, how would you describe Bernardini? He's an upper tier stallion, but he's not Medaglia d'Oro or tap it, etc.
That's a good way. He's really a top. I mean, he's a very good stallion. He's had a few sons go to stud right now. It's still early for him in terms of having studs, sons at stud. But really, see, when you get a horse like To Honor and Serve, and it's just the nature of the game, right? If you don't get a bunch of horses, a bunch of stakes winners early on, it's a commercial killer, and that eventually means that that horse's time in Kentucky is limited, and sometimes a horse will just get a really good offer and even before their foals really done anything and people sell. You take a horse like Hanson, for example. He was sold before he even had runners.
Right.
Other times you'll get a horse that, To Honor and Serve is an example, first couple of crops haven't really hit big, so it's unfair to the horse in a way, but it's the reality of the commercial marketplace that the stud farm is just, they're not getting the mares, and they weigh the offer versus, holding on to a horse, and they sell another horse that was sold real early, obviously, before his runners had a shot, was the AP Indy horse at Windstar, who had Noble Indy this year. What was his name? One of the AP Indy horse was, let me just punch his name in, Noble Indy. And he was... Take Charge Indy. Of course, he was sold, before he had any runners.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So you know, you get horses like that. I heard the you know, the end of your last conversation, we're talking about riffing on some of these horses that have been sold abroad, and it happens. You know, the horse that I always think about, kind of the modern day, if you want to call it the modern day example of this, was Dust Commander. Dust Commander was sold to Japan in the 70s. And then his first crop son, Master Derby, appeared and won the Preakness. So then what happened was Gainsway went and brought Dust Commander back from Japan. And when he came back, he never really hit again. You know, he was serviceable, but you know, that particular case marks a period from which you can start to kind of gauge horses as they've been sold. More horses started to get more big horses, I should say, started to get exported. 49er, of course, was a massive exportation, as was in more recent times Empire Maker, and Empire Maker now has been repatriated. Judmont got an extraordinarily great offer for that horse from Japan. He went to Japan, and of course, once he went, same kind of thing happened, right? Royal Delta, I mean, everything started just clicking. And ironically, during the period he was in Japan, he really didn't do well. He had runners, they have such high purses. So, you know, average runners made a lot of money, but he didn't really have many stakes winners in Japan. It really opened the door for Haras Don Alberto and Gainsway to put together a deal to bring him back. Now, of course, his first yearlings are starting to sell, and they're selling pretty well. So those are big cases. You can even have, you know, think of smaller cases in recent times. Hillendale had the Tappet horse Concord Point. He got sold, then American Gal G1 winner appeared, right? He was a fairly inexpensive horse. We now have To Honor and Serve with this mare, filly winning the Alabama. This kind of stuff, it's bound to happen, especially nowadays where stallion is really on a pretty tight rein, and if they don't hit right away, it's brutal. The horse I'm very familiar with from Mr. Fipke was Jersey Town. Stood at Darby Dan, and after his first 3-year-olds ran, it just dried up. He would have been a candidate, for example, to be sold abroad right away. Of course, Mr. Fifty didn't do that, so he sent him to British Columbia to stand this year. And lo and behold, as the crop turned 4 this year, first crop member B. Jersey won the Metropolitan Mile.
Yep.
That could have been another exact case of that, you know, had he been sold the career someplace, and then we'd be talking about that. So it's more a function of the tight rein staring managers have because of the commercial element to it. People just won't breed to a horse once their first 2 and 3-year-olds haven't yielded a big horse. If you're a horse like a Curlin, if you're a horse like a Ghost Sapper, If you're a horse like a Blaine, they can withstand that because they're expensive horses. They put a lot of money into those horses, and those stud fees can absorb a big loss, a drop off. In the case of Ghost Zapper, starting off at $200,000, went all the way down to $20,000. Curlin started off at $75,000, went down to $25,000 before they rebounded because they have the staying power to do that. Scat Daddy's another horse, by the way, started off at $30,000, I think, but dropped down to $10,000 before he would have been $100,000 before he died. You know, if sometimes if you can give the horse a chance, you might be able to curtail that. More often than not, though, most horses, most average stallions, you know, the commercial reality is that if they don't hit, they tend to fall off. I've actually looked at a kind of a predictive model of how to assess a young horse, because more and more people, breeders, commercial breeders, are looking at stallions and you know, they're really not giving them a chance after their first two-year-old. So unless you're a stallion, excuse me, that with your first crop, unless you're a horse that is within the top 10 freshman sires, I've found that the prospects are pretty dim moving forward. And, you know, sometimes even if you're a number one horse, and there have been a few cases of that, it's hard to sustain it. And it could be bad as well. It all depends on how loaded the first four books of mares are for you to be able to sustain it. That's why we've always talked about stallions having their best opportunities in their first couple of crops.
Well, and there's a couple of interesting follow-ups for you to run with, and I'm glad you mentioned the B Jersey injury and retirement as part of the reference. And you know, for those that may not have heard, tendon issue, and what I've got to ask, because there's a couple of recent examples, mm-hmm. between a horse like B Jersey and maybe more spirit
right.
could be folded into this, and he's a son of Escondarea.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, he hit, more spirit hit after Escondarea was taken.
Exactly.
But go ahead.
So let's say, I mean, Mr. Freeze is obviously, you know, in the process of his career, and there'll be other spots that Dale Romans will pick. But when you look at these kinds of stallion prospects, and we should also fold in last week the news that City of Light, a son of Quality Road, is going to stand at Lane's End when his career's mm-hmm. over. So he's right. the beneficiary of a hot, fashionable sire, but right. how in, you know, injurious to a prospective stallion career are these three horses, as an example, B Jersey, More Spirit, and potentially a Mr. Freeze, associated with, you know, either a kind of a specialty private stallion in mm-hmm. Jersey Town, mm-hmm. and two exiled stallions,
yeah.
and Escondarea and Donner and Serve.
Yeah, I think it's going to be it's very, very for More Spirit, Mr. Freeze, and B Jersey. It's going to be pretty tough for you to be able to overcome it. You have to win a Breeders' Cup Classic and a ton of money, and still. You're going to be a Bayern, who's another example of an offbeat stallion, awfully wild. But, you know, yep. Bayern stood for $15,000 with all his accomplishments terrific female family behind him, Helen Alexander family, but that sire at the front was tough, right? Now we're seeing that this horse's yearlings are being extremely well received, and you know, it's if he were to go on now and do it and become successful, all will be forgiven. But for the young horses starting out commercially, if a Breeders' Cup Classic winner and a $3 million earner like Byron has to start at 15, you can imagine what a B Jersey has earned $1 million, one grade one win, Met Mile, is going to be forced to endure below that. And then take into account, the Mr. Freeze and More Spirit. That's why More Spirit's been running for so long. There's a better upside to racing a horse like More Spirit and making money than there is to standing the horse. So there is extreme pressure. It's very difficult to syndicate horses like that. It's very difficult to get owner breeder interest, because the owner breeder segment of the marketplace, Steve, particularly regional owner breeders, have been the segment that's disappeared quickest from the landscape. You know, right now we are dominated by commercial breeding and ownership at the top end of the game. The smaller stallions would have been the province of smaller owner breeders. With their disappearance, it's very difficult, obviously, to breed commercially at that type of lower end stud fee.
Interesting topic. And I know that when it came to City of Lights news, I was very pleased for Michael McCarthy. That's for a horseman that has obviously established himself, but making stallions is something that takes, that takes trainer, from level A to level B. Let's talk about the horsemen that are seeking the 149th Travers, and Curlin, clearly, he's, sometimes you'll see trains with two engines. This is a train with four engines, all with Curlin painted on the side.
Yeah, it's really remarkable, and it's a testament to Curlin. We've spoken about this so many times. The ultimate type of classic stallion. People know when you go to Curlin, you have the chance to get a horse that stays 10 furlongs and above. And this 10 furlong Midsummer Derby, as it's called, four Curlins out of 11 horses, including the favorite. And, it's really one of the reasons why he's the most reliable source of classic stock right now in this country on dirt.
Take us through the field a little, Sid, and some thoughts. We could start with the Curlin Sons and what this opportunity represents, and clearly Good Magic. We know what this is for him and what it would mean to Chad Brown. Really the 3-year-old classic that he has, I think, the most desire to win. Not that he already has a Preakness, but not that the Belmont and Derby would be less appealing, but the Travers has a special appeal with Chad being local. It feels like this would, this clearly would make the year, that much more special for Good Magic. I mean, who is never run a bad race. I mean, you can't say that about every horse that we look at this time of year when they're 3 years old.
Well, Good Magic, obviously was a two-year-old champion. Ran into Justify in the Classics, or could well have been, it could have been a different story. He's got a chance now with Justify on the sidelines to make amends and become a second part of the year horse. He's already started off really well. More importantly, on pedigree, really, he's built for that. He's made to be a horse that's going to get better as the year progresses. He's got that. Curlin can get you good two-year-olds, as we've seen. He can get you those two-year-olds. Exaggerator was another one who was a good two-year-old who won the Preakness. But more importantly, I think as Curlin himself was a three-year-old and a classic winner and progressively got better, this is a trait of the line of Mr. Prospector through Smart Strike, his son. Smart Strike, of course, the sire of Curlin. Smart Strike, also the sire of Looking at Lucky, who had Accelerate, an older horse. Smart Strike, also the sire of English Channel, who had Voodoo the other day, a sire of older horses on turf. It's very much a distinct characteristic of this branch of Mr. Prospector through Smart Strike, which we're seeing these three stallions, of which Curlin is one. And they tend to be horses that really blossom from three onwards. And with that type of profile behind him, I think Good Magic, he's already a champion. He's showing that he's held his form really well. And, pedigree-wise, he's really made to get better. Now, having said that, you take a look at the other Curlins in the race, two of them are lightly raced, just coming into their own, which is just an example of what I'm talking about, King Zachary and Tenfold. These are horses that, are 3 year olds essentially, getting better. Vino Rosso showed spring 3 year old form. He's got every right to. He ran a real good race last time, closed really well. What's really heartening about it is that you've got four of these horses that, on pedigree, on paper, and from what we've seen running style-wise and developmentally, all appear to be horses that still have their careers ahead of them, a lot of their careers ahead of them. And it's not like we're looking, say, at a horse that's hanging on and this may be the last start before he's whisked off. So those four, I think Tenfold is still a horse that's learning. He's got a shot. It's going to be an interesting race. Throwing the filly, she is by Medaglia d'Oro, whose record with fillies has also been just absolutely exceptional. He's an elite sire. Stands for $250,000. We saw how they sold at the sales. $3 million lots out of the top five the other day. He's known for a first crop icon, Rachel Alexandra. He's also known for yet another exceptional filly, Songbird. He's got a Wander Gadot is a classic winner, Queen's Plate winner. won at a mile and a quarter. And, you know, the connections are correct. If they go into this race and they win this race, they really put themselves in a place to be considered, very highly considered, among this very good filly crop for a championship. So it's for her, she's got the right sire anyway to be in a race like this, because he himself won this race, and he's from the Saddler's Wells line. He gets horses that win on all surfaces, all distances, and through the ages as well. So she's going to be a filly to keep an eye on. She's only 5-1. I thought she might be a little longer than that, but hey, it's looking like a pretty good race. I mean, I like her. You've got Gronkowski in the race. Man, the real mystery horse here is, of course, Mendelsohn, Scat Daddy, $3 million horse, won on turf, won big in Dubai, and they seem to be really persevering with him here on dirt. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what he can do here.
Also, the presence, they've got the Lonro and the interest when it comes to Gronkowski, the offbeat, Bravazo, awesome again, more than ready, Catholic Boy. We've got, there's a candy ride. Who am I thinking of? There's a candy
Trigger
ride.
Warning.
Trigger warning. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's a real great group of sires. And I mean, Catholic Boy is another horse. You know, he's obviously been real effective on turf, but Connections wanted to go back to the dirt here to try him. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. Another element to the day, as well as we should say the year, is Catholic Boy also has co-ownership with Sauk Human. And, you know, it seems like every weekend, Steve, Sauk Human has a runner in a graded stakes race. If not more than one, several, you know. And his profile, I got to say, you know, there's some people that, you know, I put a tweet out there the other day, like it or not. I mean, he's there. His operation is pretty impressive. And from what I understand, on Travers Day, he's going to have about 6 to 8 horses running just on that day. Yeah, I spoke to him the other day, and think about this. Last weekend here, he lost the Alabama with Midnight Bazoo, right?
Yep.
Which might have been a, you know, obviously a big disappointment. But can you believe this? On the other coast, he won the Del Mar Oaks.
Mm-hmm. We talked to Leonard Powell yesterday about Fatal Beret.
Yeah. And was that Leonard Powell's first grade one winner?
First grade one, yeah. He's got three, yeah. I think he had, three grade threes before this.
Yeah. And one of the things that Saul was telling me about is that one of the things he enjoys is working with some of these younger trainers. So Brad's Montemoy Girl was, I think, Brad's first grade one winner, if I'm not mistaken. Leonard Powell,
yes.
Now with,
yeah,
with this one. So Saul was telling me that part of, you know, what they've been doing with their ownership groups, and by the way, I might have, since we got on this topic, this is going to be the topic for my column, just this Friday in TDN organically. We've come to it, but Saul was, you know, telling me that one of the things he likes to do is to work with some of these younger people that you know, are on the verge of just hitting. You know, so in a way, it's almost like a wildcat and young stallions before they strike. He's doing it with some trainers as well as stock, but his ownership profile is pretty fascinating. And he told me he's got 102 horses at the moment. And, you know, of course, they have various percentages of them. But he said if you were to look at the total percentages, that would be the equivalent of owning 50 horses, because essentially the cumulative ownership interest of those 102 comes to 50%. So that's a pretty higher figure than I had anticipated, which makes his involvement even more significant, you know. I think he's going to be an important topic, Steve, as the year plays out and we come again to the end of the year, and if things go as they're going, because, I mean, he's winning an incredible amount of stakes races. Once the championships come into play, I think there's going to be that controversy again, because last year, you know, there was a bit of a controversy among leading owner nominees, and Liz Crow, a bloodstock agent that he uses, had sent a letter making a case for Saul Kuehlman to the turf writers, and that created a lot of blowback, and I spoke to Saul about that as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year and how Saul is viewed when it comes to that. And it's worth mentioning now about that as we progress to the end of the year.
Yeah, plenty of there. Yeah, there's. I hadn't thought about how many potentially would be turning up this weekend, but you're right. They may need a new escalator from the boxes to the winner's circle.
Yeah,
for
Saul. You know, I was at one of the races. I think it was at Belmont. It might have been on. It was on Belmont Stakes Day, and I was just walking around with my wife, kind of behind the winner's circle. We were just hanging out there for a little while, and it seemed like race after race, Saul would be going up and then coming back down the winner's circle for the next race, you know? And every time he'd walk by, the Jamaicans over there hanging out by there would say something to Saul. Saul would talk back to them before he went into them. So he seems like a guy that has, you know, a pretty good head on his shoulders, too.
And affable and
yeah,
very upbeat affable. And he's pretty infectious when you see him at the track. He's and away from the track as well.
And it was the first time I had actually spoken to him yesterday. In fact, of course, Catholic Boy will be his horse in this race. Partnership with La Penta and that group.
The horse that has kind of slipped in here under the radar, I mean, obviously Trigger Warning, a late addition, Mike Roan, and he's a horse that has run well in the outer provinces. But Meistermind is the unknown quantity here, and yet Windstar, China Horse Club, and SF. This is a Bodie Meister out of a Smart Strike mare. So there's, frankly, plenty of hints of turf in this horse. It took him a while to break his maiden. Came in June at Churchill and going a route of ground. He clearly is a stayer. This is, you know, the sibling. This is out of the Mind That Bird family, Minding Your Own, my own. And I haven't heard three words said about him. I think only because he came in, you know, kind of late into the picture.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously he's a horse that is just a maiden winner coming into this, and he ran over the track, and he was fifth last time out. It's surprising that he is in this race, and he's got good connections. Obviously, the ownership is pointing it out, the breeding, bred for the mile and a quarter, by a horse who was second in the Derby and a half to the Derby winner, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's obviously bred for this trip. And, you know, Steve Asmussen has obviously felt that, you know, what's going it.
Yeah, I had not heard, you know, his name until, you know, days ago, and he started turning up in the intended list, and an interesting addition. And you know, that mare, this is actually, there was a full sibling, a full sister that has only raced once, but you know, she's been paired up to, you know, some, at the beginning, you know, some fairly modest expectant stallions. You know, she was partnered with Birdstone, then Yanaguska, even the Score. And curiously, when you know, from that group, she got Mind That Bird, Brother Bird, and Doulahan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she went to Tappet, got a filly named Meza, who was 0-2, then went to, yeah, Giant's Causeway, got a horse that the Zayats named for really a very sad story, 37 Lives On, and that filly, or that Ridgely actually, just couldn't win. It was 0-8. Two Bodemeisters, and then there's a Medaglia d'Oro, a two-year-old, and a Pioneer of the Nile, weanling and yearling. So it's kind of funny that the mare has been more productive, Sid, with modest stallions than she has with high profile ones.
That's a really good point. And I know this family pretty well, because it was one of our recommendations was Doulahan for Jerry Crawford, even though it was even the Score. And, you know, one of the things you noticed with this, when you were reciting her success stories, who are the stakes horses again that she had?
Doulahan and Mind That Bird.
Okay, and you know what Mind That Bird and Doulahan have in common? They're both by unbridled sires.
Oh, look at that! Even the Score and Birdstone.
Exactly. This mare has nicked extremely well with unbridled sires. And now when you're talking about this one coming up in the race, it's an unbridled sire too. So they did breed her back to that line that was so successful for her. They're anticipating here that perhaps distance, the fact that we had already talked about, the mare is by Smart Strike, and we talked about the fact that that's a late developing line of Mr. Prospector. And, you know, you talk about the sire line too. Bodemeister was a late developing horse himself. So, you know, it's possible they know that this horse has some talent, need some distance, as you pointed out, and you know, we're taking a shot, and so they're doing that. But the breeding is back to what had been successful. Sometimes you get mares that just click with only certain sire lines. And, you know, an example in the same race is Mendelssohn's Dam. She has produced Beholder, Into Mischief, and Mendelssohn, all G1 winners, all by Stormcat line. Now, she's been bred to other mare, other stallion lines, and hasn't had success. So that phenomenon you talk about, we see that frequently. Some mares, for whatever that reason is, whatever that affinity is, they tend to prefer some sire lines that those lines might have some similar characteristics that blend with her. And, you know, and you see it in the Mendelssohn Dam. You see it in the Doohan and Mind That Bird Dam. So it's worth keeping, you know, an eye out for this colt down the road, even if he doesn't do anything here.
Yeah, an interesting interesting story here, and I'm keeping keeping an open mind. But when I sit down tonight, do the handicapping. Travers, one of my absolute favorites. In fact, had a chance. It was with Ian Wilkes yesterday, and at Derby time, I had brought the Travers poster from the great Street Sense. Travers, just a epic throwdown, and had Ian with the Grasshopper, Neil Howard. Mm-hmm. And the next year, Greg Montgomery, who actually will talk to Greg next day or two about this year's poster, and he had a terrific treatment of Calvin Burrell on Street Sense, and I want to say Robbie Alborado on Grasshopper. And it's one of the best Travers ever. I mean, it's up there with a little short of Jaipur Raidan, but it's awfully good. So Ian signed it at Derby, and I kept missing Carl Nafsker. It's funny, I saw Carl and Wanda on Derby Day, but kept missing him at the barn. And so I left the poster with Ian, and he had Carl sign it, and I'm looking forward to framing it up.
Nice. Yeah. Well, you know, this is a great race. Really, I know it's one of your favorite races, and it's really a race, Steve, when you look at it, where it's a true mile and a quarter race. You know, that track can get taxing. You need to have a lot of stamina to win this race. And even when you think about a horse like the horse you just brought up, what's his name, Meistermind?
Yeah.
That horse, I mean, that horse broke its maiden at a mile and a quarter and broke it pretty big. And then when he came back at a mile and an eighth, perhaps it was a short race for him. Excuse me. It was against older horses, and you know, it could have been second. It was like head, neck, fifth. You know. So yeah, who knows? Maybe your words of wisdom there. I'm going to take, you know, quote unquote, I'm going to really take a closer look at this horse and keep an open mind. That may end up, you know, making some money for you.
That's that's the best part of looking at these late season 3-year-old races. Everybody is so familiar with the most obvious faces. They don't have, you know, they just don't seem to have the same feel or respect. Or open mind, anyway. You know, that the horses that have been bubbling under the surface. And granted, historically, this race, and we should, you know, between now and Friday, get the opportunity. In fact, we're going to listen to Tom Durkin's call of that terrific 2007 Travers. But you know, looking, this is the same theme I struck on last week with the Alabama Sid. We spent so much time going into Derby and focusing on the mile and a quarter for the three-year-old boys, and we don't seem to have the same focus and you know inspection from that mm-hmm. angle when it comes to the Alabama, and then when it comes to the Travers, there is the historical angles, but it's not as pronounced, it seems, and you know we look mostly, I suppose, there haven't been too many. 10 Most Wanted comes to mind.
Yeah.
On top of my head, who else, you know, won a Travers that, you know, that was kind of a, not a second tier, but just wasn't as successful in the first half of the year. Unshaded, speaking of Carl Nassar.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And, exactly. Who else? Thunder Rumble, that's going back.
Oh, that's a great one. That's a great one. Well, the Dead Heat, Alpha had established credentials. Golden Ticket was bubbling under the surface.
Yeah, that was the Dead Heat.
Yes, that was unbelievable. Yeah. I'll give you one, and people that bet with me that follow the analysis, I don't know why it happened the way it did. And people may know where I'm going that have been fans, and I don't do this too often in terms of lauding a particular selection, but and it certainly was a win that came. That needed photographic evidence. I was so sure that a Fleet Express was going to win that Travers. I singled him at the end of a pick four. And I don't know what it was exactly. I mean, he hadn't, you know, he'd run not great. I think he was second or third in the Jim Dandy. But there was just, I don't know, something about his development arc. I mean, there was a horse that didn't, you know, he didn't really get good until, you know, midsummer. I mean, there's an obscurity that came out of nowhere to win a Travers.
Yeah, that's a good one. And you know what? I was just thinking about one right under our nose that we're not even paying due respect to was the 12-1 winner by the name of Arrogate.
You know, I think that's interesting. Dortmund was so, you know, everybody was waiting for Dortmund for the other shoe to drop and to make it, you know, for him to get that elusive big win. But yeah. I certainly, I don't know. I just because it was Baffert under the circumstances, I suppose he came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and I think it was his first stakes win.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, and speaking of Jimmy Jurkins, there's also VE Day, which was
a
great
one.
When he ran 1-2,
right,
with Wicked Strong.
That's a real good one.
So it's not, you know, the Travers, you know, I started to say, you know, Travers typically won by, you know, like a summer bird type, a street sense, you know, the horses that had established moments, you know, earlier in the year. But there's enough pop-up winners to be respectful. Coronado's Quest.
Yeah,
Coronado's Quest is a good example.
He was pretty highly thought of.
Yeah, but he had, he hadn't had a high profile win up to that point.
Didn't he win like the Remsen at two?
Did he win the Remsen?
Well, let me look.
Or did he win the? I don't think he won the Champagne. I don't know. That's a good one. He had. Here we go. He had won the Dwyer and the Riva Ridge and the Wood.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
And the house. It's funny. You know, for a horse that did what he did.
Oh, he did win the Remsen, too.
And he did win the. Look at that. He did win the Remsen and the Nashua and the Cowden.
Yeah.
Why is he not more widely respected with that run that he put in?
Mm-hmm.
Travers, Haskell, Dwyer, Riva Ridge, Wood Memorial.
Yeah. That's a five
straight. Four straight graded stakes there, and a two, the Cowden, the Nashua, and the Remsen in a row as well.
Yeah.
And you never hear his name mentioned from that era, from the 90s and coming up into 2000 era. You never hear his name mentioned breathlessly.
Especially since, this was a horse that was trained by Shug and had the big connections, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Stuart Janney with the McNairs.
Yeah.
Well, this was a terrific rambling and free association segment. I want to. I promised a listen to the 2007 Travers, and I'm gonna. You've motivated me to feather a few of these in between now and Saturday. So we'll remind everybody that Work Thoroughbred Consultants is your choice to connect with Sid and plan your matings. The time is now, folks. September, October, November. You've got to get your plan in gear, and of course, you could even discuss with Sid upcoming. You know, November era bloodstock acquisition sales, and maybe even scour some for some claims. Sid will help you with that, that you could then put into service. Reach Sid 510-490-1111, Work Thoroughbred Consultants, and you follow Sid, you follow Sire Watch. And Sid, this was terrific. Enjoy Travers, and we'll recap next week.
Absolutely. I had a great time, Steve. Thank you.
Sid Fernando. Fabulous. And as we head out to the top of hour three, see about the scratches for the pick six carryover. I'm just going to give you races 5 through 10. That's what I was waiting to see what was going to happen here today. Let's listen to Tom Durkin's call, 2007 Travers. It had been the summer goal. And I can recall being with Haskin when he, I can't remember if he talked to Nehrud, he'll tell you tomorrow. But when Nafsker, after the Preakness and after Street Sense had been beaten by Curlin in the Preakness, Nafsker reached out to John Nehrud and said, "Should we run in the Belmont?" It was getting tremendous pressure. Naira wanted Street Sense to come and to. You know, follow up with a rubber match potentially. Who knew what we were in store for when it came to the filly? But at the time, they were really trying to get Street Sense to come to the Belmont. And Nafsker was torn. And Nehrud said, "Well, what's your long-term goal for the rest of the year?" He says, "We want to win the Travers." He says, "Don't run in the Belmont." And that's how that decision was made. And Street Sense pointed for the Travers, and this was the result, an unbelievable throwdown with Neil Howard and Lane's End's Grasshopper. Here it is.
And they're off. C.P. West off to a sharp start, and there goes Grasshopper. Grasshopper breaks alertly today, up and after the lead. Street Sense got away well. He's running third in the early going here, down through the inside for you, Repo. So the field races for the clubhouse turn here, and Grasshopper will vie with C.P. West for the lead. Grasshopper on the outside, C.P. West toward the rail. For your Repo in behind them at the inside, and Calvin Burrell will keep Street Sense in the clear on the outside, out of harm's way in fourth position early on. Then Loose Leaf and Sightseeing was about eight from the front, and a break of another six to Helsinki. The opening quarter, 23 3/5 seconds. Into the backstretch, and it's Grasshopper who is the pacemaker. Grasshopper clears the field now. Robbie Alvarado trying to throttle down that speed. With that, CP West comes up a bit closer second. Street Sense is very close to the pace today. He's only 2.5 lengths from the lead. Down the backstretch after a sensible half mile of 48 seconds flat, it is Grasshopper the leader. On the outside, CP West right alongside. Street Sense outside them in the clear in third. Then Loose Leaf, For You Repo toward the inside. Sightseeing only 4 lengths from this moderate pace, 6 or 7 back to Helsinki. Around the far turn, 3/4 in 1, 12, and 2. It is still Grasshopper in front. CP West still second. Burrell has yet to make a move with Street Sense. They're right there now, just a little nudge for Street Sense, and they're making their move for the lead. And the leader is Grasshopper as they come to the quarter pole. He's had it easy so far. Here comes Street Sense, who rolls up to him, and at the top of the stretch it is Street Sense and Grasshopper, and they hook up here, coming into the final furlong. Grasshopper is a stubborn foe for the Derby winner. Street Sense is full up. They're still head-to-head for the lead. Street Sense in a desperate struggle here with Grasshopper. Street Sense and Grasshopper under the line, and Street Sense prevails.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you want to hit big at Saratoga and Del Mar, ExpressBet is the only way to play. ExpressBet customers have access to free handicapping information, like wager guides for the Traverse and Pacific Classic, and expert tips from renowned handicappers like Eddie Olchik. Plus, new ExpressBet customers will receive a $500, $100, or $20 welcome bonus when they sign up today. Learn more at ExpressBet.com. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.